There are societies and cultures throughout history who have honored, exalted the aged people, the elderly. There are societies and cultures throughout history who have exalted, overemphasized youth. Desire to look young, the desire to act young, the desire to stay young. Cover the gray, hide the wrinkles at any cost. Creams, rinses, gels, toupees, hair transplants, cosmetic surgery, Botox. On and on the list could go. There's nothing wrong with wanting to look one's best, but the aging process cannot be stopped. Exercise, proper eating, and other things can slow it down, but sorry, Ponce de Leon, there is no fountain of youth. Contrary to the way of the worldly minded, many times the Bible honors the elderly. Proverbs 16, verse 31, the gray head or the gray hair is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness. And so instead of proclaiming I am X number of years young, there's nothing dishonorable in defining one's age in terms of how old you are. But getting older doesn't automatically mean getting wiser or getting more righteous or spiritual. That all depends on how someone uses their youth, their middle age, as well as their old age. Observation and application, we might say, not age, bring wisdom and righteousness. For example, 4 years of college does little good to someone who doesn't work hard and apply themselves. 1 year of hard work will produce more than 10 years of indolence. And so old age is merely the fruits of how one has spent his or her youth and middle age. In Ecclesiastes, the preacher in the text we just read gives three keys that will help us prepare for the golden years of life. In fact, we can call them the three R's of living. That's in Ecclesiastes 11, verses 9 through 12. 1 is actually the specific text that we're going to be looking at this morning. The words rejoice in verse 9, remove in verse 10, and remember in chapter 12 and verse 1. And so in chapter 11 and verse 9, he says, rejoice in your youth. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these God will bring you into judgment. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Neither the preacher, who's commonly the writer of this letter is commonly referred to as the preacher, neither the preacher nor any of God's word teaches stoicism. The Stoics taught that freedom from passion or emotion or desire was the highest good, to develop a stern and tranquil mind. I think of Spock. That was a guy on Star Trek a long time ago. Somebody who has no, you know, they no response, just they're there, everything is straight-laced, no emotions. There's no dull, there's no boring philosophy like that taught in scriptures. That is not enjoined on God's people to portray themselves always in such a manner. Bible also does not teach the other extreme, Epicurean hedonism. A guy by the name of Epicurus taught that pleasure is the highest good. Seek pleasure and avoid pain is what life is all about. In the mid-1600s, an English poet by the name of Robert Herrick wrote a poem entitled, "To the Virgins to Make Much of Time." Some people may know, maybe a little more familiar, if you watch Dead Poets Society, I referenced that a week ago, haven't seen it in a long time, but nonetheless, the Carpe Diem, similar as well, but also makes reference to, "Gather ye rosebuds while ye may." Now, some people think that's the title of this poem. It's not. It's the first line in the poem. But here's the poem. "Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. Old time is still a-flying. And this same flower that smiles today, tomorrow will be dying. The glorious lamp of heaven, the sun, the higher he's a-getting, the sooner will his race be run, and nearer he is to setting. That age is best which is the first, when youth and blood are warmer. But being spent, the worse and worst, times still succeed the former. Then be not coy, but use your time, and while ye may, go marry. But for having lost but once your prime, you may forever tarry." In this poem, he's not encouraging reckless living. He's advising people to take advantage of life while they're young. The poem contains, I believe, an element of profound truth and is similar to what the preacher is saying in Ecclesiastes. He's saying, make the most of every moment. Enjoy life to the fullest. The preacher is saying, rejoice in your youth. Make the most of your life. Enjoy it to the utmost while you can. But that's not the same thing as saying, sow your wild oats. It's not the same thing as saying, seek pleasure and avoid pain. The rest of verse 9 and verse 10 make that abundantly clear. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these, God will bring you into judgment. Enjoy life. Enjoy the blessings God has given, but don't misuse them. You will be held accountable. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh. For childhood and youth are vanity. And so that brings us into the next R, the second R, found there in chapter 11 and verse 10. Remove. Remove sorrow and evil. He says, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil, or remove evil from your flesh. For childhood and youth are vanity. They are fleeting. This faulty concept of live wild in your youth, live religiously in your old age, is a mere delusion. Reminds me of a young fellow who came to me decades ago. We talked a lot. He had a lot of personal problems. And he came to me and he was getting ready to enter high school. And he said, I'm just going to goof off for the first 2 years of high school, do nothing, and then I'm really going to buckle down and straighten out for the next two. Difficult thing to do. First of all, the last 2 years of high school will build on what you've learned in the first 2 years, or they should. Secondly, 2 years of complete lack of discipline is not going to prepare you to be twice as disciplined in the next 2 years. Read of a young lady who had become quite worldly. And she met a lovely elderly lady at an evening party, and she made reference to this lady to another lady who was standing by her. She said, "What a beautiful elderly lady. What a picture. How I hope to be like that when I reach her age." This lady commented to her, "Well, you may be like that if you wish, but if you would paint such a picture as that in your later years, you'll have to begin mixing the colors now." To continue the painting metaphor, a 20-year-old encounters a 70-year-old who's painting a lovely picture, and the 20-year-old says, "Wow, what a lovely picture. I'd like to be able to paint like that. When did you start painting?" "I started painting when I was 20 years old," the elderly gentleman said. And so the younger person says, "Well, I want to be able to paint like that when I'm 70. Yet for the next 50 years, doesn't pick up a paintbrush, makes no effort to learn how, picks one up at 70 and starts trying. You get the point. That's not going to work. And many people think like that. Serving God does not become easier just because one is getting older. Worldly things don't lose their appeal. Ben Patterson wrote in a book called The Grand Essentials. He said, "I have a theory about old age. I believe that when life has whittled us down, when joints have failed and skin has wrinkled, capillaries have clogged and hardened, what is left of us will be what we were all along in our essence. Exhibit A is a distant uncle. All his life he did nothing but find new ways to get rich. He spent his last years very comfortably, drooling and babbling constantly about the money he had made. When life whittled him down to his essence, all that was left was raw greed. This is what he cultivated in 1,000 little ways over a lifetime. Exhibit B is my wife's grandmother. When she died in her mid-80s, she had already been senile for several years. What did this lady talk about? The example I can think of was when we asked her to pray before dinner. She would reach out and hold the hands of those sitting beside her. A broad, beautiful smile would spread across her face. Her dim eyes would fill with tears as she looked up to heaven, and her chin would quiver as she poured out her love to the Lord. This was Edna in a nutshell. She loved Jesus and she loved people. She couldn't remember our names, but she couldn't keep her hands from patting us lovingly whenever we got near her. When life whittled her down to her essence, all there was left was love. Love for God and love for people. In old age, with our body no longer useful, we become the essence of our desires. Greed, lust, hatred, murmuring, happiness, kindness, goodness. You can't spend 30, 40, 50 years serving yourself and then all of a sudden expect to want to serve others and to serve God in your last days. There is no benefit in a wasted youth. The third of the three R's is remember. Remember your Creator. Chapter 12, verse 1. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come and the years draw near, when you say, "I have no pleasure in them." It's interesting, the prospect of old age and the prospect of death causes the inspired writer not to say, "Remember, you must die." Rather, he says, remember your Creator. By this, he clearly distinguishes himself from the skeptics, from the cynics, from the Epicureans with whom he's often been confused. Something else interesting is that remembering implies doing. Remembering implies doing. Notice a few passages that underscore that. Verse 18 and 19. The text says, "You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. If you remember the Lord, then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God, and follow other gods, and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish." So if you forget the Lord, therefore if you don't remember the Lord, if you forget the Lord, what's going to happen? You're going to follow other gods. Who you remember, what you remember, will determine what you do. And so he admonishes, you shall remember the Lord your God. Notice Psalm 119, verse 155. 55. Psalm 119, 55. "I remember your name in the night, O Lord, and I keep your law." I don't think those are separated, the one from the other. He keeps his law because he remembers the Lord. The one leads to the other. Also, Judges 8, verses 33 and 34. "So it was as soon as Gideon was dead that the children of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals and made Baal Berith their god. Thus the children of Israel did not remember the Lord their God who had delivered them from the hands of all their enemies on every side." This time we have it in reverse order, but the connection is still clear. They began to worship false gods because they did not remember the Lord their God. You can think in 1 Samuel chapter 1 where Hannah requested a son, prayed to God for a son. We're told that God remembered Hannah's request. It says the Lord remembered her. And was that it? He remembered her. No, he remembered her and she conceived and had a son. The remembering implies the action. Also, God remembered Noah when he and his family were in the ark. The text says that he remembered Noah and he caused a wind to pass over the earth and the waters subsided. To remember your Creator in your youth will keep you from many regrets in your old age. The many things that we look back on and say, I wish I had done better in school. I wish I had not started smoking. I wish I had never taken a drink. I wish I had saved myself for marriage. I wish I had spent my time more wisely. I wish. The only way to live a truly productive life in your youth and in your middle age is to remember your Creator. Rejoice, remove, remember. He says, before the difficult days come, before old age and debility set in, followed by death. And then he continues with a very graphic picture of that over the next six verses. "A man came running breathlessly to a subway train after running for a considerable distance. He got there just as the train was leaving, and a bystander remarked, 'You didn't run fast enough.' The guy said, no, I ran fast enough. I just didn't start soon enough. In old age, many will look back on a wasted youth and a wasted middle age. Life will be difficult and perhaps even depressing, and the constant refrain will be, why didn't I? But it doesn't have to be like that. If we follow the admonition of the preacher, we can avoid that pain. We can avoid that displeasure. The golden years of one's life should be years of peace, godly influence, service, and hope, because heaven is nearer than ever before. But this is an accurate picture of old age only to the extent that one rejoiced in his youth, knowing that God was watching, removed sorrow and evil from his life, and remembered his Creator in the days of his youth. Let's stand together and sing the song we've chosen.